Me too.
Here.
Dan Moore.
Here.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
Please join us in the pledge.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And I request a motion to approve the minutes from our last meeting, March 19th.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Financial report. Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioners. Just wait for it to come up. So I'm pleased to present to you the financial report for the first 3 months of this year. As you know, the first quarter is our slowest quarter of the year in terms of our interactions with our guests. But a lot of work is going on in the background, and I'd like to highlight a few things in the financial report that shows some of that work that's going on. At the very top is property tax. Over the past year, we've spoken a lot about property tax and delinquencies at the county. So coming into this year, we had some concerns about where we would end up relative to those kinds of things. And in January and February, when we received our advances, we were about 50% behind last year through February. So we had a lot of concern, but our March property tax settlement for the first half came through, and it basically aligned everything with what our expectations would have been. So that's good news. We continue to do some analysis on that first half settlement and communicate with the county to understand better what the second half is going to look like. So stay tuned, and we'll share that information in future meetings as we learn more about what to expect when we get to July and August. Local government grants and gifts is up over years, and this is really reflective of what's going on with capital construction. So we're fundraising more because we have large capital projects going on right now, and you'll see that later in the presentation about how that matches up. I highlighted interest, fines, and others only because there's a variance between years, but that variance is because in March of last year, we received some proceeds from the sale of carbon offset credits on the voluntary market. So we had some proceeds last year that we didn't have this year. And then construction expenses, as mentioned, we have a lot going on, as everyone's aware. And I thought I'd give you just a quick breakdown of that $25 million year to date. 9.9 million of it is the primate forest. 6.5 million is the Patrick Des Parker Community Sailing Center. $1.2 million is the Cedar Point Bridge. $1.1 million is Seneca, and then so on and so forth. But that accounts for the lion's share of what we've been doing. Looking at the zoo, it's obviously been a long, cold winter, but despite the weather challenges, the zoo is actually experiencing attendance uptick of 17% year over year, which is great. There's a little bit of a timing difference in there that was talked about back in January, which is just in the timing of our payment to our partner on Wild Winter Lights that occurs between December and January. So there's a little bit of that increase, but most of it is because the zoo's attendance is up year over year. And then the big story down below is construction expenses, and this is really pretty much all primate forest. So the expense numbers you see under capital, the 2.5 million, that's primate forest related. And then the other restricted revenue and other restricted expenses, that is revenue from the Zoo Society, and then the expenditure of that money from the Zoo Society. Golf is also up in terms of rounds year over year. They are up 17% as well. And despite the weather challenges, you can see that their revenue in total is ahead of last year, which is pretty fantastic. And then on the construction side, this is work being done at Seneca. And the capital equipment expense is a purchase of a new fleet of carts for Ironwood. Their carts were quite old. And then I threw Enterprise up here. Now, Enterprise is a division that doesn't have a lot going on during the winter time. But what they have been working on really hard in the background is preparing for the new season. There's a lot of really exciting things that are going to be happening with Enterprise. First of all, at the Patrick S. Parker Community Sailing Center, we have a great concession there that's an excellent dining experience right on the lakefront. So they're gearing up for that. Enterprise is also responsible for taking over North Coast Harbor. So there's a lot of work going on there to get that all ready to create a great transient and docking experience for boaters and others. And then with the Hinkley Lake Dam complete and the lake back this year on both ends of the lake, both the Hinkley Lake Boathouse and the spillway are going to be back up and running. So there's a lot of work being done there to bring those amenities back better than ever.
Do we have to pay the city to take over the Inner Harbor, or did, was this just
no?
No. So we're running it now. Okay.
Happy to answer any other questions.
That's all I had.
Actually, that was the question I had. I'm not sure. So do we have a contract with the North Coast Harbor?
So North Coast got amalgamated into, I think, the 9th Amendment or 10th Amendment? 7th? Seems somewhere in there. The 7th Amendment to the lakefront lease. So it's just amalgamated into it. So it isn't a one-off. So it's a very specific, just like when we had to redo over at Edgewater when the roads changed and others, we had to move properties around. So this is just, it was just an amendment to the lease.
Right. And we have, it was a mention of some capital expenditures, and those are some expenditures we're putting in up front, but we're managing the property. And so there's a revenue stream that will be coming through to cover those expenses over time.
Yeah, there's a number of different things with the big grant, the way the docks were originally put in through the federal government and how they can be rented / leased, and the activities that we're hoping to put in there. We will be discussing a buyback of a certain number of docks to actually turn them into transient docks to actually run revenue differently than the model that was actually there. Mm-hmm. They also, what I would say, had a very poor guest experience, where you checked in may have been smaller than these two tables, like actually put together. So there was really no guest experience. These are boats that come from all different parts of kind of the lake systems, whether it's all the way to Detroit, Buffalo, wherever. So we're trying to create the hidden gem shop or hidden gem cafe over time, but they'll have a nice place to actually land, check in. There'll be different brew boats, different activities that'll be going down there as well. And it's also will be the trailhead to the East 9th. So that'll be the start of the trail that we're building with the county from East 9th all the way to MLK. So the lit trail with the capstone being the Patrick S. Parker Sailing Center. So all of that linear activity will all be kind of put together. The hopefulness is that at some point in time, we'll be able to rent bikes. People can hop on the bikeway, then go over to East 55th, the galley restaurant, use the services there, and then come back to their boats and then go back out. So it's kind of a very, very well thought out strategic plan.
Excludes or includes Foyne Beach?
Excludes currently.
Brian, then for people that are cruising the lakes that are going from Buffalo to Detroit, will there be a way, some sort of a connection that they can hook up with us?
Having now control of most of the marinas and or yacht clubs, the transient business, Nick and August have done an amazing job actually working to recruit boats from different areas and putting together events and catch ups and boat regattas and different types of things. So they're going to work very hard at kind of changing the business model to bring boats in and out.
That's great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Very, very much appreciate. We will move into general action items. The very first one, we have a retiring guest with us today. We have Renee Truelson, Chief.
Morning, everybody.
Morning, Commissioners.
It's my pleasure to stand in front of you and recognize one of our esteemed employees that we had at the Metro Parks here. So, Renee, if you'd come on up here for a minute. Thank you. Great to see you, by the way. Renee Truelson, over 26 years of service to the Cleveland Metro Parks, providing vital administrative support to both the Metro Parks Police and marketing departments. Her professionalism, teamwork, and commitment to improving operations supporting officer training and payroll, and advancing key projects had such a lasting impact on the organization itself. Some of the roles that Renee held through the 26 years, she was a secretary, she held admin assistant, she was admin assistant to the for the marketing department, secretary for payroll and training, and then with the police department, she was administrative coordinator and then department administrator. So Renee held a lot of roles, did an outstanding job. Quick fun fact, for years, the Metro Parks Police Department was, their payroll was done by hand, which was a very laborious task because we are not just a 9-to-5 Monday through Friday organization. There's all kinds of things that come into play, and Renee just did an amazing job. And then we went to great technology that helped Renee do it a lot simpler and much more efficient. So she was a big stronghold of our department for many years, and big shoes to fill, even though those are small. We're working on it, but she'll be sorely missed. It was great working with her. We had such a great relationship, both professional and professional, personal wise. We had just a great time. So it was official. We had a magnet board up at the police department. We had everybody in the administrative office in the West Wing, as they call us, up on the board. But it was official. We took down Renee's picture, but even though she's gone, she won't be forgotten. So here you go, Renee. Congratulations.
Would you like to say anything?
Just thank you for the opportunity to work at Cleveland Metro Parks. I'm very proud to have stayed here all these years and the many fine people that I've got to come to know and work with and keep up the great job. So thank you. And I love retirement.
On behalf of the Board of Park Commissioners and the Jubers, we want to recognize you for your 26 years of service in Cleveland Metro Parks. And what it doesn't highlight here is your commitment to your family. And that's one of the truest things that I got to know about you. So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
One other retiring guest could not be with us this morning. Pete Wildenhouse has served 23 years as a general maintenance worker, natural resources intern, service worker, grounds maintenance, and technician. He was most recently in Millstream Run with Ken Morgan. Pete's time, talent, and efforts through small engine repair, plumbing, leadership, and pivotal training with seasonals and new employees. Pete had a real love for the parks, and we will definitely miss Peter's work and talents in his 23 years of service to Cleveland Metro Parks. The recommended action falls on the bottom portion of page 9, recognizing Renee and Peter for their years of service to Cleveland Metro Parks.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item is budget adjustment number 3. Gary.
Commissioners, I present to you budget adjustment number 3. This is an increase in appropriations of $17,766,624. And continuing the theme of it being all about construction right now, that's really what this budget adjustment's about. $10 million of it is an additional commitment we received from the Zoo Society for the Primate Forest. We received that at the end of March and are now appropriating to spend those funds. And then another $5.7 million of that is related to the Patrick S. Parker Community Sailing Center. And these are either donations or grants that are already received or committed to, but yet not yet received. So we are just appropriating to get those spent right now and get those on POs.
Recommend action is the bottom portion of page 10.
Move approval on the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
I feel like I'd like to have the winter behind us, but we are now thinking of winter 2026-2027 road salt resolution. Michelle McHale, Director of Procurement, put together the salt bid. Recommended action falls on the mid portion of page 11 to execute a contract with the Ohio Department of Transportation, winter 018-27, for contract for road salt.
Move approval of the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Next one is adoption of revised policy, trademark, copyright, and logo use. Rose?
Thank you, Brian. This is an existing policy that we had that went through substantial change as we discussed last month. So that was the first reading last month. We have not had any additional changes to what was proposed. And so this month it is before you for approval.
Move approval of the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next recommended action is amendment number one, contract 1776, RFQ 6447, Coastal Shoreline Riverfront Professional Design Services, Rocky River Nature Center, erosion protection. More specifically, this is really under the deck, protecting the infrastructure of the actual nature center. We did, and we are able to use different sources of funds. The new revised contract for $188,720 falls on the mid portion of page 13 for services for deck painting and change orders, because we're able to work underneath it to be able to take care of it and preserve it for a longer period of time.
Move approval of the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Next on page 14 is the authorization of award of bid, solid waste disposal, Old Highland Road Bridge Replacement, Euclid Creek Employee Benefits Consulting, working on our healthcare for the next year, portable toilets, asphalt concrete, and energy procurement services. Recommended action falls in the top portion of page 14.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Vouchers and payroll.
Commissioners, I present resolution 2604-052. This represents the following vouchers, which have been reviewed as to the legality of expenditure in conformity with the Ohio Revised Code.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Public comments? Marty?
Morning. For a park system to push alcohol, cigars, gambling is just plain wrong. Though many lawyers are sitting here, some of us are not. I discovered that the Ohio Revised Code smoking prohibitions are listed under health, safety, and morals, something you choose to ignore. No public park system should be promoting or profiting from behaviors recognized as harmful. You proudly claim the insurance savings coming from a nicotine-free workforce, yet are willing to subject visitors to those risks in the name of revenue. You're even opposing the express wishes of many patrons and their elected officials if you pursue the liquor licenses for the Hinckley Boathouse. So whose opinion matters? Seems like the professional sports owners always have your ear. Soccer stadium deal contingent on a top-tier franchise? Missed out twice, but you still bought the land. A hotel developer may be willing to step up, promising profits? Just say no. Where are the open public discussions that weigh these choices? They rarely happen. If the only justification is new sources of revenue, then spend less and skip feeding the addictions. Don't bail out the owner of a rusty barge he couldn't unload. Look to the park's founding. The justification for the original park is preserving land and encouraging visitors to experience and appreciate natural areas. The justification for having a zoo includes engaging the public and understanding and protecting animals. Sports arenas, hotels, and the like benefit corporate interests who are very good at looking out for themselves, while often leaving others with any loss. Many proposals which appear as RFPs at first public viewing might be rejected if challenged earlier. The Bay Library sighting, far along, was shot down when residents finally learned of it. Too much seems hidden. Even the recent abrupt departure of the CFO didn't generate public acknowledgement. Usually retirements are not so sudden or kept so silent. Much turnover in that position, like musical chairs for the CFO slot. It's certainly concerning as we rely on them to oversee your huge budget. Don't dilute the good you have accomplished by giving your allegiance to those whose self-serving interests. Do right by Stinchcomb and the rest of us. Thank you.
It's probably worth noting that the alcohol has been served at the park, I mean, way back, probably at the very beginning. I mean, certainly Edgewater Park was a place where you could rent a bathing suit. I think it was a leather bathing suit, and you could you had to pay to dance, right? so these are old traditions.
And just as a matter of correction, Cleveland Metro Parks did not buy the soccer stadium. There is a purchase agreement that has not have been executed. So just as a matter of correction, Marty's facts are incorrect on that. We did not have not purchased.
You know, the only other observation I want to make, you preface everything, Marty, by saying if the only basis is for new sources of revenue, and that clearly is not the only basis. The fact that we try to be, I think, creative in looking at ways to generate revenue so that we have to lean on our taxpayers less. I mean, you've been here for all these meetings and all of the financial reports, which, by the way, each year our financial advisors have received both state and I think even national awards. But the recognition is we pay very close attention to the finances because we have to. We have to make sure that we are serving not just one sector of the public or another sector of the public. We have a lot of different people out there with a lot of different wants, needs, opinions, you name it. So we're not going to satisfy everybody. But I think what we've tried to do and what we've demonstrated year in and year out is we've increased ways that we can build more, provide more, and find ways to fund those things to serve a broader public. And all the time we try to do it, we're trying to be very ethical about it. We try to be very, very serious-minded in what we're doing is truly in the public interest. So I know we have differences of opinion, but collectively, this is an operation that really strives to do exceptionally well. And I would challenge really any other, especially government organization, to be able to consider the things that we do and succeed as well as we do. And we do it because there are a lot of committed individuals in this organization who are proud and dedicated to serve the public. That's all I want to say. Next.
We will move into information briefing items. If there are no other public comment, we will move into the natural resources update, 2025-2026 project update. Jen Greiser is here to give us our director of natural resources. They've had a tremendous years. So we will let her take it away.
Thank you, Brian. It's such a pleasure to be here this morning. Happy Earth Day, happy Arbor Day, Native Plant Month. What a great month for our Natural Resources Division. And I thought this was a great opportunity to follow up last month's excellent presentation by Jim Rodstrom, Sean McDermott, and Chris Kuhar about capital projects in the built environment, and now offer some updates on what we're doing in our natural areas. I'd like to start out by acknowledging my excellent team that has just under 200 years of collective service to Cleveland Metro Parks. And we're going to go way back in our beginning and start with our natural areas. So of our 25,000 plus acres, we have over 18,000 acres of forest constituting 2.3 million trees. We have over 3,500 different wetlands. Many of them are small, but we have some large ones as well. Over 1,000 primary headwater streams that eventually make up our large rivers like Chagrin River, Cuyahoga River, Rocky River, Yucca Creek, and just over 500 acres of meadow. So these are the natural areas we're talking about. And let's go to our forests and our trees, starting with some legacy tree species that have seen forest pests and pathogens like Dutch elm disease, chestnut blight, hemlock woolly adelgid. We're taking a proactive approach, looking at where some of these are lingering on the landscape and collecting their seed, their scion, their pollen. We're treating the forest pests and pathogens, so we're not just letting them make their way through unabated. And then we're also propagating these seedlings. We see some hybrid chestnuts. And just this week, Connie and our colleagues were planting within the tree study area at Acacia. And Brian, yes, there are still golf balls there. We're also doing a lot of work at North Chagrin with a multi-year wetland enhancement project. And this is the contract and in-house invasive plant work that has happened there in the northwest corner of the reservation. There's also legacy ditches from the old agricultural work. So we're looking to disrupt those ditches and the tile drains that you see in the bottom photo. And then creating vernal pools to provide additional habitat for amphibians. And the last part of that project will be red maple, red pine removal. That will be the very end of the project, late 2027, maybe early 2028. And then let's take a pause away from our large natural areas and go to postage size stamp green space that is Wendy Park. And just pause to appreciate the migratory birds that we're going to see going really thriving and flying through there, staging up to get up to Canada. In the fall, we see our monarch migrations. We even have things like this lemon cuckoo bumblebee utilizing that natural space. So after years and years of invasive plant management, pulling garlic, mustard, removing mugwort, Valerie Carter Stone, Jem Brumfield have done a great job and started planting hundreds of native shrubs and pollinators to really enhance the habitat. So we want to see things like this. You might look at that and say, Jen, that just looks like a turd on a leaf. Is it? In fact, it is not. Let's zoom in a little bit. And what we have is a caterpillar for this beautiful giant swallowtail, which is an uncommon butterfly. And that came in after we did these plantings. So really enhancing not just having the cottonwood trees, but the understory shrub layer, and then the ground floor with our perennials. At Hinckley, Eric Schaefer finished up a big pollinator meadow at Top of Ledges, and I wanted to just share a couple of the steps because planting is not just digging a hole and throwing a plant in the ground. There's a lot of prep work too. So prior to this plowing and disking, he had to mow and brush hog, and then we can get in with our native seed drill, seed that acreage, and then we also set up a deer exclosure and did some shrub planting. So this year will be the first growing season for that, and I encourage you to visit and check it out. Also at Hinckley, we've done some white pine removal. This was about 8 acres that finished up the end of last year. And then at the beginning of this year, we did some non-native Norway spruce removal, opening up some views over Hinckley Lake. And then we moved to South Chagrin, and with Hawthorne Golf Course, we've taken a more proactive approach here to addressing fairway conversion after our observations at Acacia and also with our colleagues at Summit Metro Parks and their work at Valley View Golf Course, battling thistle and other invasives. So we partnered with our golf staff to treat these fairways multiple times. And then Josh Phillips got in and seeded again with that seed drill over 13 acres using grant funded dollars for the seed material. And this is what we're hoping for. We see these monarch caterpillars on swamp milkweed amongst other wildlife. So at Acacia, we inherited a small hoop house when we got that property, and Connie, Josh Phillips have been making upgrades through the years. Our most recent one was the addition of this fence. It's not a large area, but what this allows us is the ability to overwinter plants. These are some of those ash that were collected from our lingering ash on the landscape, came back to us from the Forest Service. We can plant those out, but this also gives our volunteers an opportunity to contribute year-round at that facility. On the stream side of things, we'll get aquatic here. So Sean mentioned a couple of our larger projects like the Rocky River project, Baldwin Creek. But here we worked with site construction to remove these failing side-by-side culverts that really weren't even passing the flow well. So we removed those culverts, and now just out of the picture, there's a bridge over that. So that really opens up that stream system into the Chagrin River. But we also do small scale things. A number of years ago, we established a bioengineering and browse garden at Brecksville and Millstream Run. So this allows us to harvest those live steaks. We just did that last week with Elizabeth Heiser there. And then we can install those into our projects utilizing our Watershed Volunteer Program. It can either be one of these large projects like you see on the left, or just a smaller stream where it just needs a little bit of a nudge. But I mentioned browse. Oops. Go back real quick, apologies, because these species, willow, dogwood, are beloved by our zoo animals as well. So it's a dual purpose area. We've done, after the nature-based shoreline project in 2024 at Wendy Park, we've looked for other opportunities across the lakefront and have been working with KS Associates at Huntington to look at some slope stabilization. We're also looking at other floating wetland opportunities. And one place we're looking at some technical assistance could be at East 55th. So you see this rock shoreline. This is in the interior. And this was brought to our attention that maybe these rocks really aren't needed. They aren't getting wave action because this is inside the breakwater that's way back there. And then you have another breakwater here. So this could be opportunity for improved habitat as well as access to the water. And just kind of an early intervention while we're waiting for the larger CHEERS project to come online. On our fishery side of things, last year was the first season of fishing at Garfield Pond. Lots of happy faces there. Youth Outdoors, Outdoor Recreation, love that space. And they're having a lot of success there. Mike Dirkleck continues to stock our waterways. You'll see some of that next week, I believe, with Kenny. And last year was our first lake sturgeon reintroduction with a number of partners, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, ODNR, Cuyahoga Valley National Park, Summit Metro Parks. And we're going to do that again this year. So I invite you all to join us on September 19th at Rivergate Park.
What are the economics of putting of stocking sturgeon?
Well, really, our division is looking at the ecological advancement. We haven't had sturgeon in the river in over 100 years, and it's an opportunity to bring back this legacy species, this native species that makes an important place in our ecology.
How expensive is it?
Well, this is a true partnership with U.S. Fish and Wildlife. So they are actually gathering the eggs. They do that in June, and then they take them to their hatchery in Wisconsin and rear those fish. And then they bring them to a variety of stocking sites throughout the Great Lakes, including the Cuyahoga River.
And just to bracket it, how many do we stock from the Cuyahoga roughly?
So last year we stocked 2,000 because it was the inaugural year. Mm-hmm. And then each subsequent year, there will be 1,500 stocked. And in the Cuyahoga, since we're working with the National Park and Summit, that's divided between three locations. So 500 at each location over 25 years.
Does it look like they're surviving?
Yes. So there are a subset of those fish that have a small transmitter in them. And then on at Rivergate and other locations on the river, as well as in Lake Erie, there are receiving stations. So as they swim by, you can see where they are, and they're doing really well.
Fabulous.
How big do they get?
Oh, the adults, they're over 6 feet long. So that
they look like alligators. Yeah, they're huge.
Yeah. So come and check it out. We'll give you a bucket and you can introduce one yourself. Okay, so going from water to fire, hitting all the elements today. So Prescribed Fire is a program we've had around for a long time. We don't get to do that every season, but last week we were able to burn just under 6 acres at Hinckley and Brecksville. And just wanted to step you through that process a little bit. So what you see here is Eric Schaefer hosting the safety briefing before we get in, really reviewing the plan. And then we have an ignition, and you can see our staff are wearing all their proper protective equipment. And then they're monitoring that burn and making sure it's under control, having the desired responses. And I know that this Brecksville site is right across from where I live. I just walked it the other day, and it's pretty green already, so it's going to grow in really well. Looking forward to watching that. Invasive plant management, I've already mentioned it a couple of times. We have a really active aquatic invasive plant management. We do this carefully. We track where we are. And last year, we introduced something new called this GPS backtracker, which helps us to track those treatments even more closely. But we don't stop at plants. We've been doing a little bit of invasive species management as well. So this Chinese mantid is taking the head off that monarch, a little gory, but they lay these really distinct egg casings, or Uthica, in our meadows. And we've had great volunteer traction with those the removal events, having gathered over 5,000 of those egg casings. And you multiply that by 30 or 50 to 50 that are inside those casings, it's quite the endeavor. And we've continued our spotted lanternfly work with our wonderful dog volunteer crew, but we ramped it up to lampshades at the end of last year and received ODA funding recently to make kits available to the public. And all told, between people, dogs, and lampshades, we've removed over 318,000 adult nymphs and eggs. And so all of this work culminates into the biodiversity that we have on the landscape, everything from special plants like this Jessup's hawthorn and Rocky River. I hope everyone heard about the wonderful Fisher sighting we had, clasping leaf pondweed that was previously thought to be extirpated from the state, and Anthony Casey identified that, and that the red-mantled saddlebags, this was a first record in Cuyahoga County at West Creek Reservation, which also had some other notable finds. And while it is Earth Day, Arbor Day, Native Plant Month, it's also Volunteer Appreciation Week. And we do, in Natural Resources, thoroughly appreciate all of our volunteers. Thank you.
Can I ask one question? You mentioned you're selecting some surviving, I guess they were maybe chestnut seeds and perhaps elm seeds of species that have lived through this thing. Are we using any of the hybrid seeds that are coming from other industrial people that are focusing in on chestnuts and Dutch elm?
So there's a lot there, and I would invite my colleague, Dr. Hausman, to present in a future meeting in more detail on those. But in brief, we're working with the American Chestnut Foundation on pollinating the few trees that we have on our landscape, because they're too far apart from each other to pollinate each other. So we'll go down to Mohican State Park and receive their pollen and share our pollen. And so it is very much a partnership project. And there's the Great Lakes Forest Basin, or Great Lakes Basin Forest Health Collaborative, always these long names, also partners at like Holden Forest and Gardens that are contributing to this work.
Is there any tangible evidence that there are some hardy hardy seeds from those two, from a Dutch elm and chestnut that are out there?
So a little bit different. So yes to the elm, and we have been able to propagate those seed. On the chestnut, no, the individuals we have are not producing viable seed. So that is our efforts to receive that pollen from Mohican to hopefully have viable seed. And maybe we'll see that by the end of this year.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
Jen, excellent job. Thank you to the volunteers and the entire Natural Resources crew. You look at the two parts of the mission, protecting nature and inspiring conservation. They're doing it. They're doing it every day. When you look at the over 18,000 plus active acres, the streams, the wetlands, I think we are living up to Stinchcomb's mission very, very well. The next info item we have is the hotel for sustainability purposes. Sean.
Thank you, Brian. Good morning, commissioners. As Dave pulls this up, wanted to brief you and provide the opportunity to discuss the potential opportunity for a hotel at Cleveland Metro Park Zoo. As we've been talking about opportunities to both expand revenue and increase our sustainability, what we're really talking about today is an exploratory process. So you don't know if you don't ask. So we're in this case, we're asking the market to tell us if they believe that a hotel could be possible at Cleveland Metro Park Zoo. So beginning in 2019, in working through our legal process with Rose, we actually had a feasibility study performed. That feasibility study did give us some feedback, not a slam dunk, not a no, but that it could be a potential that a hotel, a themed hotel at Cleveland Metro Park Zoo, with perhaps different components like water slides, things of that nature.
Just can't have anything swinging through the lobby.
You can't swing over the tigers. Yes, there will be specific parameters. But at the same time, really giving a unique experience could work with the right partner. They recommended, this is Johnson Consulting, they recommended that the hotel itself could be a themed destination with those attractions that would be specific to families, groups. The zoo itself has seen attendance nearly up to 1.4 million visitors in 2024, and varies on the year depending on weather, attractions, and exhibits. When you partner that with Brookside and the potential that Brookside has for visitation with youth sports, the baseball complex at Brookside has great upside potential. The football fields up on the top side of Brookside also have great potential. When you partner that with the special events that the zoo already hosts, weddings, corporate events, the great use of Stillwater Place, we already have somewhat of a built-in market at the zoo. Does it actually equate to putting heads in beds? We will see. When you also look at the larger market, you'll see here that there is somewhat of a gap. This is a very simple map. We've got downtown Cleveland in the upper right-hand corner, airport in the lower left, and then Independence in the lower right. And in the middle sits Cleveland Metro Park Zoo. So we certainly know as the center of our region in downtown, we've got a cluster of hotels, and then again at the airport in Independence. But we feel that there could be potential for a hotel at the zoo. The study that we did looked at approximately 135 keys, so 135 rooms. But again, we really want to hear what the market has to say. So in the zoo itself, in Brookside, we identified four potential sites that a potential developer could work with us to partner on. I just want to dive a little bit deeper that when we talk about a hotel developer, we ourselves, Cleveland Metro Parks, we are not looking to operate a hotel. We would want to work with a partner that does this, that is very familiar with doing things like this, and would operate the hotel and then work with us in terms of a revenue split and revenue share. So in these four sites at the zoo, all have different components, all have different approaches. We will see with responses whether one of these four are preferred by the potential respondents to the RFP. The RFP itself is out on the street. We are hoping for proposals back on Friday, May 29th. And at that time, we'll then see what kind of response we get and really hear what the market has to say. Brian, do you want to add anything? Chris, would you like to add anything?
What sort of stuff did you have in the proposal that had to do with zoo activities that would enhance the location?
I think one of the most unique things that we can bring and partner with the developer on is where we position the hotel within the zoo. So perhaps the hotel guests can have early access, can have extended hours access. Perhaps if we locate it right, we can have views into exhibits. One of the locations near the bear exhibit today would have the ability to look in to where buffalo are today. So we could position some of those sites to have really, really unique opportunities to have an increased guest focus and then a really great experience for the guest as well.
So the idea would be, the tagline would be sleep with a bear, right?
Sleep with the bear.
Not the fishes.
Thank you, Sean, for the update.
Great. Thank you.
That is the last info item. There is no old business. The next regularly scheduled meeting is Thursday, May 21st. There is executive session. Rose?
Is there a motion to go into executive session for the purpose of the discussion of the purchase or acquisition of real property?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Bruce Rinker.
Yes.
Yvette Itu.
Yes.
Dan Moore.
Yes.
Thank you. And we don't anticipate having any other business reconvene. So you're welcome to stick around, but you don't want to. Nous sommes rentrés. We have no more business. Need a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.